Today on the Science and Spirituality podcast, we had the pleasure of interviewing Ken Stone. Ken, also known as the Soul Archaeologist, is a spiritual teacher, messenger, and healer. He is the founder of the Resonance Experiment and author of the forthcoming book, Resonance, The Path of Spiritual Mastery. God expresses through Ken in a unique way. When people sit with him in transmission, they have a profoundly different experience of the divine in their body. For example, he has worked with a number of advanced former students of Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, who each said, unprompted, following their initial session with him, quote, "That was the deepest spiritual experience of my life," end quote. Ken helps elite athletes and other high-performing individuals and teams unlock and express their divine potential. His work enlivens sustaining experiences of inner peace and fulfillment professionally and personally. His conversation was great. We didn't really get into a lot of the stuff in his bio, I feel like, you know, like really in depth, but we had a really good discussion about like embodying spiritual experiences and really how to like feel that in your body. And I mean, I thought he was a great conversation.
Mm-hmm. I think we did go to a certain depth, but not as specific as, you know, certain things in his bio. But I mean, he talks about how the Resonance Experiment, which is a free program he has, which if you'd like to sign up for that, it's in a link in the description of this episode. But we did speak about that, how like there's levels of spiritual awareness and that it's like a cyclical or circular experience, not linear, where you go from step to step. And that we did get in depth with, which I think there was a part of, you know, what he was speaking of in his bio, but we might have not have, you know, specifically identified in the conversation.
Yeah. Well, we got into a lot of good stuff. So,
yeah.
And we're thinking about having him back on again. So,
yeah,
you know, we don't really do that often with guests. We've maybe had a couple of repeat guests. So like the conversation we had today kind of felt like it could have gone in many different directions towards the end. And so that's why we wanted to kind of have him back on, because we didn't feel like it was complete.
Definitely. And it was a fascinating conversation, I think, because, and he says this in the first like 5 minutes of the episode, that he's not initiated into any like specific kind of teaching or like lineage. Like it's his own kind of, I mean, it's literally in his bio. It's like his own expression of God, spirit, source, the divine through him. And it was kind of like an aha moment he had in his late 30s that he discovered that that's exactly what he is here to do. So it's personally for me, it's a really encouraging message, just hearing his story, that we're all here for a purpose. And that just if you haven't found it, you know, at 30 or 40 or 50, doesn't mean that it's not on its way, or that it's not possible, or not, there's not potential there. So that all, obviously his story and his journey sparked everything that he does in the whole conversation that we had. So it was really, really good.
Welcome to the Science and Spirituality podcast, where we dive deep into universal spiritual principles and ground them in modern science. My name is Chris Carton.
And my name is Kevin Carton. And we are committed to simplifying the spiritual side of success for you with easy to understand scientific research, so you can walk away with practical tools to create radical transformations in your life. Let's get started. So today we have Ken Stone. Ken, thank you for joining us today on the Science and Spirituality podcast.
Thanks for having me on. It's wonderful to be with you, Kevin and Chris.
Mm-hmm. We're looking forward to this conversation. And as we always begin with the guest, we'd love to hear your journey, your story of how you got to being doing the work you do today, which is a very unique approach, as we were just talking about before we hit record. So I'm very interested to hear your journey. I'm sure our listeners are too.
Sure. Yeah. I guess the quick version of the journey is, you know, I was just kind of moving through life without any particular preoccupation with spirituality. I had a personal interest in it. Of course, I have my own spiritual journey, my own journey with organized religion and blah, blah, blah. But that was sort of way in the past, you know, and this was around 2007. And I was making my living as a mortgage lender. So I was working in financial services. And and really looking to have kind of deep, meaningful relationships with my clients in the mortgage lending space, because I felt this pull to something deeper. And so I used all I had was, you know, let's have a deep conversation about finance. And I mean, that resonated with some people, but it's like you if you understand something about your deeper purpose, but you're in the wrong area, you know, things start blossoming. In any case, I read the local paper in August of 2007 one day, and it said world peace through inner peace. And it just resonated at a very deep level with me. And there was a talk that evening, went to the talk. The guy who spoke was just, I just found him extraordinary. I felt an incredible resonance with him, and I couldn't have said why. I just felt connected. I went up afterwards, asked him a question. He answered it, whatever the question was. And then he gave me, a big hug, and I'm a hugger. And so, but it was maybe the best man hug of my life, which was sort of meaningful to me, you know? And then he said, listen, we'd love for you to come learn how to meditate. You know, why don't you come? And he's just looking at me in my eyes. And I mean, it's just like, okay, sure. I mean, that makes sense, you know? And so I went and learned how to meditate, and my assistant in my mortgage practice started calling me Zen Ken because I was such a type A personality before. And it just brought a different sort of experience for me and apparently for others as well. And then there was an in residence meditation retreat, and there was one in Colorado, I think it was in August, like a couple weeks later, and that one didn't work for me for timing. But there was one down in Arizona that was in September, and I thought, geez, I got to be there. Even though the bullet points of the retreat were all things that just didn't resonate with me, you know, like be silent for 5 days. No, eat vegan food. No, I don't want to do that. I have no interest in that. You know, do yoga. This body doesn't do yoga. I'm 6'5". I look like an out of shape, retired American football player. You know, like what's going on? Why am I? But I followed that. I think at that time in my life, I was really kind of doing the thing I was most afraid of. If I was scared of something, I just did it instead of trying to avoid it. That's maybe where I was developmentally. Anyway, at that retreat last day, somebody who I had felt that kind of resonance and connection with and sort of addressed on the first day, but he was like, I don't know you. I don't know why we know each other. Last day, we're randomly paired up for the closing meditation, the third random pairing. And during that meditation, and we're in silence being guided and so on and doing, you know, these things that I thought were kind of weird at the time, a hippie dance and, you know, it's sort of gazing into the eye of your partner and all these kinds of things. Not weird as in I wasn't willing, just not part of the life I'd been living, let's say that. But very beautiful to experience. And he got out a piece of paper and wrote on it, you should be working as a healer. And wow. I didn't know what the word healer meant. I didn't. And I started sobbing uncontrollably, and I couldn't figure out why. Like, you know, like on the outside, there are just tears. I don't think there was snot exactly, but I was just completely losing it. And at the same time, I'm like, what is going on here? Like, why is this happening to me? And when we came out of silence, he said, you know, you're going to discover you've done this in many prior lifetimes, and this is more natural than breathing. And again, you know, like intellectually, I thought, this guy's nuts. Like, where's a psych ward? And for him, not for me. And at the same time, I'm sobbing again. And so, I mean, that was the beginning. And, you know, I hired him for my first kind of intuitive reading of my entire life. In 2007, in August, I had just turned 37. So, you know, kind of where I was at in my life. My life was kind of falling apart, actually, in terms of the sort of things that people can see on the outside and maybe on the inside as well. And so I wanted to know, is my life going to turn out? And he just wanted to talk about healing, healing, healing. And it was almost like an instruction kind of dynamic. And we came out of the session, and I heard him very clearly say, you know what you're doing. You don't need to be trained. Just go do it. And for whatever reason, I accepted that. You know, somebody had a migraine headache on the 1st of January, 2008. And I said, hey, apparently I'm a healer. Can I put my hands on your head? And they said, yes, put my hands on their head. My hands and feet started buzzing and tingling, and their headache went away. And I mean, that was the beginning. So wow. It was, I mean, there's so much more I can share, but that was really that and a couple of, you know, sort of healings that were very spontaneous, as they were for many years. Spontaneous in the sense that somebody would ask for something or it would come at a conversation. It wasn't like an organized kind of design dynamic. And I mean, some things happened that were just, I mean, without any qualification, they were just absolutely miraculous things that had taken place for the people with whom I, you know, shared this gift. And to me, it was like a 2x4 to the head. It was not exciting to me. I wasn't like, yay, this is so cool. I was feeling like, oh my gosh, this is not a parlor trick. This is serious stuff. And how is this even happening? I mean, my hands and feet would buzz and, you know, crazy stuff would happen. So anyway, that's the beginning of wow. this journey for me, or at least the conscious part of the beginning of this journey for me.
Right. I mean, my first question now, I mean, given that was back in 2008, it's been many years since.
Yeah.
I'm curious, first and foremost, before we get into, you know, how your work now has evolved, I'm very curious to hear what your perspective is now looking back on how that awareness sparked for you. And clearly someone was able to see that in you when you weren't able to, because right. I could already like hear the thoughts of some of our listeners of like,
right.
oh my gosh, like that happened for Ken. Like, is that possible for me? And if so,
right.
how?
Right,
curious,
right.
So like, what is your perspective on that?
Well, you mean in terms of whether it can happen for others? I mean,
yeah.
I feel like everyone has, you know, one way to say it is everyone has a gift or gifts that are the raw, undistorted expression of whatever you want to refer to that energy as. So some people would say God, some people would say divinity, some people would say source, some people would say tree fairies, some people would say earth energy or whatever, you know, and to me, it doesn't matter. Like whatever, however we refer to that, the name is not the important thing. It's the experience of that. And looking back on it, I would say it's not an idea for me. It's something that I've witnessed and experienced over and over and over and over again with people. And, you know, sometimes those things line up. And when they do, you know, that's interesting and enlivening intellectually and emotionally. Many times they don't. And when they don't, you know, I can sure appreciate that. I mean, I had my life planned out. It was not this at all.
Right.
This is nothing to do with what I thought my life would be. And it's not necessarily that radical for people either. It's just that, you know, often I think as human beings, it's easy for us to kind of develop a narrative and become attached to this is how things are happening. And I understand what's happening. And I would say, you know, in addition to yes, true for everyone, also is this invitation maybe into the unknown. Into the mystery, if you want to think of it that way, even as we're having experiences that maybe eventually we can understand or put language to, the real sort of honoring of that call or those gifts or however you want to think of it is really, as I perceive it, this continuous stepping into the further and further into the unknown. And ultimately that's a very beautiful kind of experience. And I mean, very, very beautiful for me at least. But I'm like many other people, I was, you know, I felt much more comfortable stepping in the unknown with some structure and some, you know,
yes.
Where's the comfort and where's the, you know, where's the hand holding me along the way and where's the reassurance of how this is going to go? And certainly I hear that a lot with the people I work with as well.
Hmm. I had a follow-up question about your story. Because again, you said you kind of went to this retreat or this talk when you were 37, you were making your living as a mortgage broker. And it seemed like from listening to your story that you kind of followed that intuition like right away and you kind of just jumped into the unknown, but you were 37. Like, were there any things before that were happening that kind of like came up and you ignored it? And then this time around, it was just like, or did it really just hit you at 37 and you were just like, I'm getting this feeling, I'm just going to go for it. Cause I know for myself personally, like, I feel like I'm in kind of a stage where like, I kind of have these feelings inside about what I should be doing, but I've been suppressing them for so long. And it's like, I just want to know like what kind of thing you kind of went through with that.
Yeah. I appreciate the question, Chris. It's, I guess part of it is that I, I felt called to something significant or meaning. Significant is not the right way to say it. That sounds like kind of this ego statement. I felt called to something meaningful. And I was trying to turn my mortgage practice into that, you know? So, you know, when I had a chance to figure out how to get involved in tax strategy, I certified in that. And when I had a chance to, you know, figure out how to help people with their financial strategy overall, I certified in that, on and on, that kind of thing. But in terms of like healing or deep spirituality as something I was ignoring, no. In terms of, I mean, not at all. Now what's interesting though, is that looking through the lens and the experience that I have today, I mean, I can see these kind of meaningful things that I didn't understand or that were going on and why I, you know, I mean, for example, a very close friend of the family when I was, a sophomore in high school, lived, he had cancer and was in hospice, but he lived with our family for the last month of his life. And, as he was transitioning, I was sitting on the above or sort of behind his, not his headboard, but it was a hospital bed, but behind his head. And he was rubbing his head. He was not verbal at that point, but he was rubbing his head and making sounds. And I just put my hands on his head. Now, my hands and feet didn't buzz. I just thought, so that's an example, but that's not really an example. You know, like if you said to me, why'd you do that? I would have said, well, he seemed to be, you know, uncomfortable and I didn't know what else to do. I mean, you know, I was 14 years old. I was just so, but there was a gift that I was aware of in the sense that when I looked into people's eyes, I had a sense of where they were or how they were doing emotionally. But I mean, that was like a boat anchor, you know, it was sort of a burden, you know, like the person I was married to at the time that, you know, all this happened in 2007. I mean, I would say to her, you know, why are you upset? And 5 days later, you know, and it's possible, likely even she didn't even know she was upset when I was saying it. You know, I mean, can you imagine how irritating that would be? You know, so it's not like there was some like, you know, whiz bang healing spiritual thing going on for me. Now, I mean, I was very interested in spirituality. I read, you know, spiritual philosophy. I studied philosophy in college. And I mean, there was a big question in my mind, even after I sort of determined young at 18 or 19 years old, okay, I can accept there's a God or divinity or whatever, but now I want to have an experience of divinity. I mean, that was a dominant question for me, but I wasn't pursuing it in terms of going to retreats or anything. And I didn't have an experience of divinity in my body until I put my hands on somebody's head. And I didn't know what would happen when I did that. So long answer, but yeah. I think it's wonderful that you're having those pulls. And I mean, I can appreciate how disruptive that can feel if that's the dynamic that's going on for you, Chris. And I mean, from where I sit now, I mean, I want to applaud those things, but I also recognize, you know, we sort of, as human beings, each of us does as we feel we're capable or called and doing when we're ready, when we're good and ready. And so, I mean, I'm appreciating that even more now, let's say, from where I'm sitting with you here, you know, early in 2024. I'd probably have a different answer to that if we were having this conversation 10 years ago.
Cool.
Like, oh, you got to do this, you know, something like that.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's not that I would say don't do it. I would just say, you know, you have a really powerful sense of yourself. And it's not like I'm trying to read you. I'm just saying that's true of anyone, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe part of it is that you're coming to a deeper, more powerful experience and sense of yourself, to know yourself. And everything you do to do that serves you profoundly, including in this way. And so you'll know when you're ready. And, you know, I didn't know I was ready. I mean, looking back on it, why did I pay attention to this guy? And I mean, here's the hilarious thing. A few years later, I thought, and I mean, I went through a period where I was almost homeless between these two points, 2007 and 2012, December of 2012. And I went back and listened to the recording. I thought, oh my gosh, this would be so interesting. He didn't say anything that I thought he said. He said the opposite. So, I mean, I heard what I needed to hear. And that's often the case, actually. I'll be having a conversation. It may happen in our conversation. I'm hearing you say this. Is this what you're asking me? You know, or somebody will say something because I'm constantly hearing or perceiving things that may not be actually connected to what people are saying, but maybe connected to something deeper. So in that case, not only did he say the opposite, I heard what I needed to hear and then took action. If you asked me why I did that, I'd be like, I don't know. I mean, and then the minute I started doing it, whatever that is, you know, being with people and sharing this gift, it felt like I was breathing oxygen for the first time in my life. I mean, that might sound really exaggerated, but it was that profound for me. It was like, oh my gosh, like maybe that guy's not too nuts. I mean, I don't know about more natural than breathing, but I mean, this is what I was saying at the time, but I mean, there must have been past lifetimes. I'd never even really considered the question of past lifetimes. So anyway, yeah. Longer answer.
No, I appreciate that. Kev, I don't know if you have a question because I got something else on my mind. So I guess I wanted to kind of get into, because you mentioned before about like divinity and, you know, God or, you know, the source or fairies, you even mentioned like whatever you have to kind of say to connect with that. And it really sounds like you've had many experiences over the years, starting maybe with that one where you put your hands on that person where you were felt connected to the divine. And so I guess I wanted to get your perspective on what or how you actually define the divine or God or spirituality.
Sure.
And then I guess how we can all maybe try to have experiences of starting to connect with that, because Kevin and I, like, we kind of have a similar background to you. We came from like organized religion, and like what we were taught in like CCD and all this stuff is like, I always felt like you had to go somewhere, go to church or whatever to kind of feel with God. And now over the last couple of years, I've gotten way more into my spirituality and connecting with God. And I'm starting to realize that it's really an internal thing and you can connect with that power anywhere. So
yeah.
I just want to know where you're coming from all that.
Yeah, sure. Of course. I mean, just by way of a little background, I was raised Catholic and I left the Catholic Church in my early adolescence. And, and I have lots of friends who are Catholic today and lots of friends who are former Catholic. So this isn't about, you know, throwing the Catholic Church under the bus or anything like that. In fact, one of the most profound experiences I've had with another human being was with Father Thomas Keating, who was a Christian mystic. I don't know if you're familiar with who he was, but I interviewed him, just over a year before he transitioned out of the body. And I mean, it was exquisite. It was extraordinary. So anyway, setting that aside, the reason why I left the Catholic Church was that it, for me, even at 13 or 14 or whatever age, my parents didn't insist I go to church anymore. It felt like there were lots of rules and they didn't make any sense to me. There's a hierarchy here. At least this is how I perceived it. I'm not saying this is the message of the Catholic Church. Just I perceived it as I got to go to church. There's a priest who knows better. And then there's a bishop above that. And then cardinals and a pope and on and on. And, okay, but what about just God? And I mean, this was from a totally, I guess you could say, well, maybe not so naive, Ken, if there are multiple lifetimes, but it wasn't like an informed kind of thing. It just is how I felt, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. It wasn't studied, I guess is what I'm trying to say. It wasn't founded in some, you know, intellectual pursuit to draw me there. And so, I guess I shared this, but maybe it was before we started the recording. I established that there was a God or divinity or whatever. And the way that I did that was, you know, out of the Boulder Airport, a colleague of mine from high school, I think in the fall, right after we graduated. So this is the fall of 1988. She takes me up in a small yellow airplane and we fly along the Peak to Peak Highway, which, Kevin, you're in Colorado. You know what the Peak to Peak is, right? From Ned over to Estes Park. And and this is in the fall. So the aspen are turning color and I'm up in the air. I've never been in a small plane before. And I look down at this tapestry and I was just like, oh my God, this is so beautiful. And I mean, for me, that was enough. It was like, okay, yes, there's something here. But then the question, okay, how do I experience it? So to me, spirituality is the relationship we have with divinity. That's how I define spirituality. I define religion as or the manner in which I understand religion, let's say that, is a structure through which we understand or potentially encounter or experience divinity. And so for me, it's not that they're problematic when they're together. They're just not together for me. So, but I work with people all over the world of different faith traditions for whom that structure is very important. And I honor that deeply. It's not, and since for me, at least the manner in which divinity expresses through me and the things that come out of my mouth are not, they're not about belief. They're about experience. They're about the direct encounter and experience with that ineffable presence. And I don't mean as an idea, I mean physically in the body. And as it turns out, that's one of the things that divinity does through me. So it's not even like just this idea. It was happening for years before I even had anything that I could say about it. People would call me up and say, hey, so-and-so thinks I should do a session with you. And, you know, what the heck's going to happen? They have no way of saying what happened. And I'd be like, well, I don't know. I mean, experience God in your body. And they'd say things like, well, I want to read that book. And I'd be like, that's it. That's all I got for you. If you want the experience, I'm happy to share it with you. So yeah, I'm happy to go deeper with this, Chris, but that's, for me, that's where that foundation is built. It's an experiential dynamic. To me, the experiences in life, if just forget about spiritual experiences for a minute, any experience that's really kind of at a deep level, it leads to a different kind of knowledge in my view. I call it embodied knowledge. So, I mean, even if we just look at, you know, Immanuel Kant's definition, the a priori and a posteriori knowledge, right? Logical, effectively knowledge and experiential knowledge. But what he's talking about is experiential knowledge from reading books and hearing people talk about things. In my view, he's not talking about the visceral experience of something. And I very much am. But there's lots of embodied knowledge that's not spiritual. Like sit with a loved one when they transition. That's a totally different kind of knowledge than any other. You could read books on death. You could hear family members talk when your great-grandfather or great-grandmother, whatever, transitioned. I was with them. That's one level. But if you're with somebody that you deeply love and care about as they die, as they drop the body, that's a totally different deal. And lots of other things, you know, holding a newborn baby, having sex for the first time. I mean, just all things that are accessible, riding a bike. I mean, that has embodied knowledge in it that is unique and different. And so it is with spiritual knowledge. But if at least from my view, my perspective, if we think about the things that have supported us in transforming our lives, for, again, set aside sort of the spiritual for a minute, the way I perceive life is that embodied knowledge, the experience, is always leading to a meaningful transformation. Maybe it affirms and deepens our current understanding of things, but that's meaningful. Whereas the idea of something, it's like we praise the value of knowledge, and I'm not saying ignorance is better. I'm just saying knowledge, it seems to me, of the intellectual type, even knowledge from other people talking, there's a pretty quick glass ceiling. You know, especially now if we're talking about spirituality, you know, blah, 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 spirituality. And you're like, yeah, okay. We're all one, Ken, fine. Or divinity is in everyone. Neat. How about if I have an experience of that? So I figured out, I mean, once I had language, it was like, oh, this is fun to talk about. It's great. I seem to have awareness or experiences that I can now give voice to that have meaning for people. But if that isn't coupled with an experience of what happens through me, which is actually in silence, it doesn't require any talking or anything. I mean, I can, but it's not necessary. Then something totally different can take place for the individual or the audience with whom, you know, virtually or whatever. It doesn't matter if I'm in person with them or not. So
That's incredible.
I was going to say, like, that's like one of the reasons, like when we were reading your bio, that we really wanted to talk to you is because I don't know what episode Kev we're up to, but you know, over the 200 episodes that we've done, like we talk a lot about personal development and we talk about this idea of intellectually knowing something and then actually knowing something by living it out in your life. And I feel like that distinction is so, it's like so difficult to describe with words because how are you supposed to describe a feeling of this connection with something or this, you know, I love the way that you explained it. And I guess, like, do you have like people who come to you that have never had this type of experience before? And like, they're asking you, like, what is it supposed to feel like? And do you just tell them like, it's hard to describe. Like, you kind of just have to, you know, I don't know if, if that makes sense.
No, it makes a ton of sense, man. I mean, the thing is that, you know, I've been sharing these gifts since January 1st of 2008. So what is that? 16 years, more than 16 years now, right? Where are we? March of 2024. So, and you'd think I would have a really quick, easy answer. Oh, here's what's going to happen for you, right? But it's totally different for every person. So, I mean, some of the language, like one of the things about sort of forging your own path that's both beautiful and very challenging, but really beautiful, is that language gets to be deployed in a way that's meaningful to me rather than adopting other people's, you know, word meaning or cosmologies or whatever, right? I mean, it doesn't matter at what level we're talking. So a simple way of saying it is that often people have an experience of physical resonance. So what I love about the word resonance is that means whatever it means to you, right? I mean, and you know, it might mean, you might think, oh, instantly, oh yeah, yeah. When I listen to a concert, if I'm in a, and now, but what's the music, right? So again, it's what's meaningful for you. If I'm at a concert, I'm listening to a stereo, I've got my headphones on or whatever, I am, and if it's loud enough, I can, you know, whatever, like that's the thing. It's whatever it is for you. And often when I then start sharing with someone, maybe it's during the thing or later or like years later, they'll say things like, huh, yeah, I have no idea how to articulate what's happening or what happened to me. But, and then all of a sudden they start talking about it, but it's always like, it's almost like language is a placeholder for something that's happening at a much deeper level. And I guess I felt liberated in the sense that I'm not trying to create meaning that fits with other people, but that's also problematic because if somebody comes in and says, well, what is this, all this stuff you're talking about soul embodiment and like, what the heck is that? You know, I mean, I've sort of figured out how to be able to articulate those things succinctly, but still, no matter what language I use, no matter how short or long I talk, it just doesn't begin to approximate the actual experience, which is totally unique to the individual and different, I think, for most people.
Mm-hmm. And then from your perspective, and I think this is a beautiful perspective because I feel this way too, that feeling that everyone is getting that's going to be unique to them and very hard to describe in words is God, the divine, the one source, you know, just expressing through them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I guess when you really kind of break down the pieces and get to that, that's really like the crux of spirituality. And I think what all religion is trying to get at is that one source.
I think so. I mean, I can't even begin to claim any kind of expertise in religion or really even spirituality. I can just say, here is my experience. Here's what I've learned with and from the people that I walk with and support and serve in groups and individually. And these are the sort of downloads, if that makes sense and doesn't sound too weird. If it does, oops, sorry. That's sort of how it is for me. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the stuff that's come in or the stuff that I've noticed taking place. I mean, I would say one of the through lines is the human experience often, and I think of it really as a developmental journey, not an evolutionary journey. In spirituality, I'm talking now, or in consciousness, if that's an easier way to think about it. I think about it as developmental. So at certain developmental stages, the idea of these things has a very particular meaning. But the experience of them, when we really open up to that experience, often it just is, it disintegrates the meaning. And I don't mean that in a way that's disruptive. I mean, it can be disruptive. I guess I want to be clear and transparent about it. It can be, right? I mean, people could think, there is no thing there. There's nothing in me except for my thoughts. And then maybe they're open to a session or they come into a group dynamic and they all of a sudden they're like, what the heck's happening in my body right now? So that could be very disruptive, but it doesn't tend to be disruptive in the sense that, like, you know, I work with all faith spiritual traditions, as far as I know, and none of them are going, hey, I don't believe this anymore. They're just having a deeper experience of the structure that is trying to open to that, to your point, you know, mm-hmm. Chris. So yeah, it's that intimacy. I guess I started out saying this and then never said it. That intimacy, that space within us, that presence is always there in my view. Mm-hmm. And what we're doing is we're uncovering it. It's like we have all these other layers of things, you know, thoughts, distortions, you know, the illusion of separation, whatever, whatever names we want to put on all these things. I don't see those as a problem. I don't see them as a pathology at all. I don't see them as a curse. I see them as a blessing. I see them as, you know, one of the greatest gifts that we receive from divinity or God or whatever way you want to refer to that with language. And they open this profound opportunity for us that when we begin to have those kinds of experiences, we have an opportunity to experience ourselves as we really are, which in my view is sort of concurrently available to us no matter what's unfolding in our lives, no matter what stage of consciousness we're sort of identified in, and the lens we're seeing through tends to kind of reinforce that narrative. But at the same time, no matter how disempowered the experience might be, over here is the fully integrated and embodied divine presence. And they're all the resources that come with that. And yeah, so lest I go on and on here, Chris, I'm going to try to put a meter on my response to the questions.
No, I think like, a lot of what you're saying, or all of what you're saying, is resonating with me. And I appreciate the difficulty in trying to describe the work with words. Like it's difficult to describe. And Kevin and I have experienced that so many times in this podcast, which is why a lot of the times we'll end our podcast with like, you know, we just talk for 45 minutes about this particular topic. But if you want to get anything from this as a listener, you have to go out and try it yourself.
Yeah.
There's no other way that we're going to be able to, you can't, you know, you can't think about it as much. You got to actually do it.
Right. Right.
I think
that's
kind of the embodiment aspect of it.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I think embodiment to me represents, I mean, there's embodied knowledge, right? The encounter. Embodiment would be it's integrated, right? So now it's not just available in a momentary way. That's at least the way I think of that. So if something is integrated and embodied, it's there all the time. And in the case of divine presence, it is there all the time. We're just not having an experience of it. But if it were embodied and integrated, or when it is, it's there experientially in every moment of our lives. And what a beautiful experience that is.
Yeah. Is there like a way that you can describe that threshold of like, because I feel like a lot of people, again, where do we live in such intellectual society, right?
Sure.
So like some people will think about spirituality. I might be at this place. Maybe this is why I'm asking this question. Where like intellectually, like I understand spirituality. I understand that there is a God and there is a like a presence, but I struggle with feeling that presence all the time.
Sure.
Like I'll have moments of it. So like, is there a threshold that you passed or a way that you can say like, this is what it feels like to embody that feeling?
I mean, yes. And the value of that in my view is pretty darn limited because it's my experience of it. Now it's super meaningful to me. I wouldn't want to diminish my experience of it, but let's say when I'm teaching or having conversation like this, to me, I mean, there's value in that. I'm happy to share from my story and whatever and my experience in life. But I mean, the way I perceive it is the real opportunity isn't so much the opportunity that I continue to have and step into as much as it is the opportunity that everyone has, or that you, Chris, and you, Kevin, and everyone listening has in their own life. And in that sense, I guess, I mean, one of the ways that I have sort of understood and communicated about that developmental journey in consciousness, that might be a helpful reference point to add into our conversation. You know, if you're open to it, I'd be happy to share that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think there are really kind of five primary stages of consciousness that we go through as human beings. One we're born in, I mean, let's just call it stage zero, right? It's not embodied. It's not integrated, but we have this fading memory / experience of absolute divine presence, but it's not embodied. It's not integrated. So it's there in whatever way it is. I mean, I can't remember what it was like to be 6 months old or come into the world, but I think, you know, often if you have young people that you're around or whatever, there are these little pearls of wisdom that show up and you're like, where the heck's that coming from? Or, you know, the invisible friend that's not invisible or whatever. Right. So, but this isn't an attempt to try to describe something that I notice in kids. I just have a sense that's true. Right. Mm-hmm. So, and then we move into stage one and, you know, it's like a fall from grace. It's described in the Bible, right? We eat of the fruit of knowledge and so on. And that's where the illusion of separation, in my view, descends. And this isn't at birth. This is, you know, it happens sometimes, usually, you know, somewhere between one and and 9 years old or something. But it's a function of the experience of being a human being on this planet in conflict with the experience of absolute divine presence. And at some point, the experience of the noise of, you know, whatever, this disconnect becomes the dominant dynamic. And then, whoop, illusion of separation comes in. And, you know, now all of a sudden there are two available resources. There's the whole self and the as yet unintegrated separate self, and on. Anyway, the first stage of consciousness is disempowered and unintegrated. So I used to call it victim consciousness, and boy, did that push a lot of people's buttons, and it pushed mine, but in a good way. I like pushing my buttons because I can see things more clearly. Disempowered and unintegrated, much more clean. But in the disempowered state, everyone else has got the power. Some other people do. Here's an interesting thing. There's a brilliant man named Stephen Cartman. You may be familiar with him. The drama triangle, Cartman's drama triangle. He described this in his work. He's a psychologist, psychiatrist. The drama triangle is describing what I perceive as the late developmental work in stage one, right? In the drama triangle, we have the perpetrator, the victim, and the rescuer. But it's an illusory dynamic. If you get into a drama triangle with another person or with an organization or with the world, you are destined to play all three roles. I mean, this is Cartman's work, right? But it's a beautiful description of it. So anyway, stage one has its own kind of developmental progression and so on. Stage two is empowered and unintegrated. The transition into stage two is I take responsibility. I'm responsible for creating my experience in my life. And a lot of people may be familiar with the idea of a law of attraction. That's like, you know, sort of the super empowered, but in my view, unintegrated, right? Because I got to tell God what to do. I'm creating this. It's not being created for me. It's not coming through me. I have to direct divinity and so on. Really powerful stage of consciousness. Then we get into the glass ceiling of stage two. And it's like, if I can have everything I want, I'm still unfulfilled. I still don't feel inner peace. Or maybe I don't have those things. And anyway, there's a glass ceiling. Stage three is whole and unintegrated. And stage three, how do we get there? We surrender. We let go of control. I mean, there are four-letter words, and then there's surrender. You want to really push people's buttons, talk about surrender your whole career right here. Pushes my buttons too. So, and then there's the integrated experience, stage four. But here's the thing, the integrated experience, which in stage two, we imagine is like cotton candy and Ferraris are falling from the sky and everything's perfect, you know, and there's a little twinkle that, you know, I imagine I hold my intention, I direct this, and then this appears. In stage four is the integrated experience of disempowerment, empowerment, and wholeness. They're just integrated rather than being unintegrated. What's the difference between integrated and unintegrated? Well, lest anyone, myself included, get excited about the integrated experience, think of your breath. Now, a sign, in-breath is unintegrated and out-breath is integrated, or vice versa. See, there's a powerful relationship between the two. It's either integrated or it's unintegrated. If it's integrated, that's the experience of divinity as me, you, us, everyone, everything. If it's unintegrated, then probably when my unintegrated self gets animated, I get upset. I become agitated. I become irritated. I get mad. I blah, 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 right? My buttons get pushed. So in this integrated experience then is what you're asking about, the sort of tipping point. But here's the crazy thing or the beautiful thing. We don't just go one, two, three, four. It's not 100% of our life. I mean, probably all of us or most of us have stuff in stage one that still hasn't integrated yet. I mean, even people who are like, you know, extraordinary yogis or whatever, whatever tradition you want to, you know, exalt in their work around integration. So the tipping point is, it's confusing. It's beautiful. I mean, my perception is that raw expression stuff is happening, even if you're not even consciously aware of it. And probably that's a fully integrated experience. So, you know, so the tipping point, it's like, it's there everywhere. The invitation to step into a deeper experience is everywhere. It's baked into the experience of our lives, but often it's hard to recognize because we're getting agitated but when it's being animated and we become identified with that struggle rather than, oh, here's an aspect of my as yet unintegrated whole self showing up to integrate. So rather than like some big, you know, the chorus opens up and the heavens open in this tipping point. It's more like these little kind of micro moments of, oh, there's a deeper experience of resonance in this context, which previously I was more identified in my unintegrated self rather than my integrated self. And often, at least for me, I'm able to perceive that looking into the rearview mirror, you know, oh yeah, last week this happened, or in this dynamic, somebody asked me about this and we had a different conversation because of where I'm at, not because of them. Anyway, does that make sense?
Yeah, it's a really interesting perspective for sure. Kev, what'd you think?
Well, it's fascinating. You mentioned, I had never heard of that the levels of consciousness with a level of zero. There's like a zero point, which was very interesting to me. I had not heard of that before, but the other four levels I've heard in just different language, but
sure.
I really love the point of the integrated and not integrated or unintegrated.
Yeah.
And I think it's really beautiful the way you describe it, that it's not like that linear path, which is so logical and left brain and very like materialistic to view it as, whereas it's more dynamic and experiential, as you've been using that word a lot, than anything else. And that it's not linear. It's more of like a whole, like a circle, and that
it is a circle,
the different parts of it within that whole circle.
Exactly. So
it's really amazing to hear that. And I think at least what I got from what you shared is that it's like everything is perfect in that realm then.
Yes.
Right now, not anything
right now.
Different.
Yeah.
And that we're right all now. On a path, which it's even funny using that language, because then like it's set up in the mind. It seems like it's like a linear path of like, this is where we're going. It's like, no, it's a path of discovery, of experience, of all those different aspects. And my word would be like enjoying it, or like learning to enjoy that experience so that we can actually experience it all. Like, it's again, hard to put words to it, but I hear you. I feel that really deeply.
Yeah. I mean, maybe if I can offer you just a quick metaphor.
Yes.
And to me, this resonates deeply. Maybe it'll make sense to someone else. I don't know. Maybe it'll make sense to you. I feel like I'm walking around in a circle. It's the same circle I've been walking around my whole life. It could be a big circle, a small circle, doesn't matter. And I'm on stilts. And as I integrate, the stilts get shorter and shorter, and I'm getting closer and closer to the truth. And I don't mean the truth like the truth about this or the truth about aliens. I mean like the experience of embodied divine resonance. That's the truth I'm talking about, the experience of that. And so in some areas of my life, you know, I'm like, I'm not sure there's any stilts there. Like, I feel like I am walking that ground. I'm having that experience of divinity within myself. But in other areas, I feel like those stilts are miles high, you know? And so that's part of the beauty and mess and, I don't know, perfection, really, to come back to what you were saying about that. And so path is like, I go from here to there. You know, the circle is like I'm walking round and round, revisiting the same themes, but I'm having a very different experience as I walk round and round, or I'm not, to ensure that whatever it is that's in the queue has a chance to really integrate.
Right. That's a great analogy. Thank you.
Yeah, that is. Well, what came to my mind when you were saying that is an analogy that I like to use, and I think maybe it'll help someone, or I don't even know if it makes sense, but like the idea of, let's say, like nature. Like I used to live in an apartment where there was a nature path behind, and I'd walk in my dog and my fiance all the time. And like, you know, when you're walking through nature, like you have the sense that like everything around you is perfect. Like there's this, you know, the source coming through the ground, making these plants grow. But then you start to look around, and like every single plant, every single tree, when you look at it, has like imperfections.
Right.
And it's growing in some weird way, but like the tree is not thinking about how I'm growing. It's just growing whatever way source is pushing through it. And so like, that's the way that I feel. That's what I'm thinking of when you're explaining all these levels of consciousness.
To
the point of like being a tree, where it's like, all it's thinking about is I'm a tree, and however life is going to express through me, that's just what's going to happen.
Yeah.
That's the surrender piece too.
Yeah. Brilliant. And I mean, let's take it a step further, right? If you say to a tree, tell me about what it's like to be a tree. The tree's response is, I am. Like, what are you? And also, what are you talking about? A tree. I am. That's it. I am. It's just being as it really is without excuse or explanation. And the same opportunity exists for each of us.
My next question for that is, and I guess, how do you reconcile that like ultimate surrender with also having goals and wanting to achieve things in life too? Because I feel like that's kind of where the perfect intersection of like our human and spiritual kind of interact. And I think for some people listening to this, it's like, all right, like, does completely surrendering mean I can sit on the couch all day and watch Netflix? And, you know, it's just like that's the kind of thing I'm thinking about in my head. And I wonder your thoughts on that.
Oh, no, I love it. So, you know, I'm going to offer the mic drop that Thomas Keating offered me when I interviewed him. He said, "We live in the thinly veiled illusion of free will." And I was like, boom, that is so powerful. But it's really disturbing if you're identified with the idea of free will. And all right, do with that what you will. My experience of it is that, yeah, there may be some Netflix couch time in the process of surrender, because it's like we're leaving behind the cosmology of separation. And the cosmology of separation is structures that define stage one, things like government, religion. Often religions are stage one structures. Basically, the impetus, as I perceive it in stage one, is safety. So think about that. There's the safety and the structure and so on, cosmology of stage two. And the primary impetus, as I perceive it in stage two, is sovereignty. So I subordinate my will for divine will. Well, that's a big step, right? And the aspect of me that's surrendering is actually my empowered and unintegrated self, no less. It's not my whole self that surrenders, it's already integrated. So in the surrender dynamic, what I have discovered and am discovering and am working on embodying and integrating is that divine will actually is not other. It's the thing that's so beautiful about it, right? In separation, like the empowered and unintegrated self, or at least mine before I surrendered, and I am such a type A, I scheduled my surrender, by the way. So
I need to hear more about that in a moment. But continue.
10 days ahead of time, I'll be surrendering next Thursday.
Yeah.
When was it? June 30th, 2011. Okay. So anyway, but on the other side of surrender, ahead of time, I thought I'm going to be homeless. I'm going to die. I'm going to, you know, I won't ever see my kids again. I'm going to become an itinerant healer. Worse, I'm going to have to go back into banking. Nothing against banking. I just was experiencing oxygen and spirituality and really felt like I was in my true purpose. But you know, I was suffering profoundly, and I began to realize the source of my suffering is my idea that I know better. So the thing about surrender is I don't perceive it as I fall on the ground and wait for divinity to animate me. Divinity has been animating me my whole life, whether I knew it or not. It's that on a granular level, that my attachment to what is unfolding is gone. So let's just say the three of us decide, and here I am honing in on your space, right? So the three of us decide we're going to do a podcast together. And you're like, no, Ken, this is enough. But okay, let's just say for fun, we're going to do that, right? And we have all these ideas. All these people are going to participate, and we're going to interview these great people or whatever, you know, and millions of people are going to listen to it. But if we're in a surrendered state, if we're truly in a surrendered state, each of us is checking in and trying to figure out, am I being motivated by my wounds or my core wound from my disempowered experience? Am I trying to resolve that? Am I trying to exert more control and sovereignty? Or am I opening up to divine will? And if we're opening up to an experience of divine will, we're not concerned about any of the material things. In fact, all we care about, at least for me, for my voice of the three of us, would be, am I in an aligned state with myself and divinity, as if there's a difference? And am I behaving and acting in accordance with that? And that's not immediately accessible. We have to practice. We figure it out. It's like driving, you know, do I want to turn left? Do I want to turn right? What does it feel like to stop? And so on. But as we embody and integrate, those things actually start to present and be experienced as a knit together dynamic, not this or this, but this surrender and action taken together. But the action now is I'm doing it because I feel called or inspired to do it. And whatever happens, happens. If anyone ever listens to this imaginary podcast, who cares? We're doing it, really. And it doesn't mean even that we're not inspired by the idea of X number, you know, 10 people will listen, 100, 100,000. We might be inspired by that, but we're not attached to it anymore. It's in a sense, it's not important at all what actually happens, but it doesn't lessen our enthusiasm for it, especially as we embody and integrate at a deeper level, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, that's perfect. Like I totally understand what you're saying. And again, like just hearing your explanation, that's the difficulty of it too. Being humans, like we want to have plans. Like we want to know how things are going to work out. And a lot of times, like I fall into this all the time. It's like, I don't want to take any steps unless I know the next 10. And it's
absolutely.
Like, you know, I'm just thinking about some Bible verses there, like the lamp unto my feet, like you are only going to get enough light to see your next step. And you kind of have to have faith and trust in the process. And that's the surrender of letting go. And there's another Bible verse that comes up a lot. And it's like, whether you go to the left or to the right, like I'll be there kind of thing. It's like that idea is mentioned a lot in the Bible. And it's like, whatever step you take, like I'm going to be with you.
Right.
And I think one thing I'm getting from this conversation at a more deep level is that connection with the divine, where it's like, and I forgot exactly how you put it, but it's like my will and divine's will are the same. Right. And I never actually thought about it that way before. So thank you.
Yeah. I mean, and there for sure, let me clarify, right? Because like, unlike many people or some people, let's say, who have this idea that the ego is just something other than, I believe there is an integrated ego and an unintegrated ego. There's a unintegrated empowered self and an integrated empowered self. So for me, what you're describing, this dynamic is actually, the only way into it, the only way into surrender is I don't surrender to the God I know. I surrender to the God I don't know. Mm. I don't surrender to the plans that I think God has for me. I surrender to the unknown, the mystery, the fog, the cloud, the dark hole, whatever it is. Because if I go in holding on to something, thinking I know better than whatever, then I'm in a place of resistance. Mm. And so, but what I have discovered, and so there are some unintegrated and empowered expressions of me, of my dream, that I look at and I go, hey, maybe that's part of divine will and maybe not. I don't know. But other things where I go, wow, that is definitely part of divine will. And I had no idea, you know, and sometimes they're just innocuous things like, you know, I've got this stereo that just sounds absolutely unbelievable. I used to be a sound engineer. I love listening to music. And I'm like, who knew that was an integrated dream, you know? And so, and other things where I think, well, that's obviously an integrated dream. What's going on? And then I'm like, oh yeah, just an opportunity to integrate. Impatience is a perfect, you get what I'm saying. So but the thing is, if we human beings approach surrender from a place of my will is God's will, and I'm going to surrender to God's will, we are setting ourselves up for some profound suffering. I mean, profound. It's only, and I'm not even claiming I'm even anywhere near fully integrated. I'm just saying it's fascinating to realize, like, here's another myth. My personality is going to disappear when I integrate. No. That's part of the beautiful expression of who you are. You know, my hangups with my personality, those are invitations to integrate, for example, right? Same thing with will and so on. I think hopefully it makes sense what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. You're the concepts you're speaking to. I'm curious if you had read or heard of Emmett Fox and his phenomenal teacher, speaker, New Thought. And you're speaking of a concept which I first read, and that's actually the only place I've ever heard of or read about that idea that God's will is actually my will. When, if I'm understanding what you're saying correctly, that when it's integrated, because if it's unintegrated, integrated, then separation, right?
Right.
But when integrated, actually they're one and the same.
Exactly.
That, when I first read that, I was like, oh my God, like it just had to just question and rethink everything in my own life. But it's a brilliant idea to take forward, which and explore and experience individually, because, you know, you have your own experience of it. I have my own experience of it. Chris will, and so will whoever's listening to it. But I just wanted to highlight that because that it blew my mind when I first heard of that a couple of years ago.
That's brilliant. I mean, the thing is that there, I can say this for me, whether it's true for other people, I in stage two projected and continue to project for the things that are in stage two, empowered and unintegrated. I project, here's what this will look like when it's integrated. Here's what God's will is. Here's what my life will be. Here's what, when I'm engaged in my calling, that's going to look like. But those projections are all coming from a place of unintegrated perspective. And I mean, you know, Einstein's got something, a powerful quote, effectively, you don't resolve in the consciousness that the problem was discovered in, right? It's the same thing. You can't resolve in the consciousness the problem. So bad news for people who are primarily identified in stage one, there is no safety. There is no safety. Nothing will deliver safety. Here's another sort of, for me, shattering idea. There's no justice. There is no possibility of justice when the consciousness is one of disempowered and unintegrated. And fascinatingly enough, and this is not about trying to like say morality is all relative. I'm not saying any of that. I'm not trying to diminish the pursuit of justice in the world or anything like that. I'm simply saying at the intrapersonal level, when I get caught up in this, I need justice, or so-and-so needs justice, or I want justice in this relationship. You know, it's like just moving stuff around on a puzzle where I'm just shifting things around. In the disempowered consciousness, there's no resolution. There's no sovereignty in stage two, none. There's no wholeness in stage three. It's whole and unintegrated. We think we have to surrender to open to an experience of our wholeness. But surrender is still an act of separation. God is other than me. Right? So, I mean, spiritual practice has a profound role. It is a glass ceiling in the journey of integration because we don't have to practice what we are. Say to the tree, tell me about your embodied tree practice of leaf growing. It's almost spring here in the Northern Hemisphere. You're going to blossom. Tell me about that practice. I mean, this doesn't, maybe you gentlemen talk to trees. For sure, people in your audience do. Go ask a tree. And if what you get back is, yes, here's my practice, projection is going on. The tree does not have a practice. It doesn't. It can't. It's not a practice. It's just being as it is. So sorry to get so wound up with it.
No, that's perfect.
No, I was going to say, because, you know, we're getting close to time, but like,
yeah,
you know, we've had people on the podcast multiple times, like not a lot of people, but like sometimes the conversation feels like it can continue going. And I feel like this might be one of those where like I have not more questions, but just more things to kind of talk about in this realm. And I think we're getting to a point where a lot of listeners are, if they're listening through to this whole thing, are hopefully going to get a lot from it, because I've had a lot of light bulbs go off. And so
beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh man, I'd love to come back if that's what you're saying. I would be honored to come back. And I mean, I hope I haven't, I want to have a conversation. I hope I haven't dominated our time together, but I'm really am very energized by the conversation that the three of us are having. And I love it. I mean, to me, this is it. This is the, to me, spirituality is the foundation of everything. One's relationship with divinity is, bar none, the base of that foundation. Doesn't matter what else happens after that. In my view, that's where alignment happens. It's not, here's the thing, from an embodiment perspective, it's not in the head. It's not about thinking. It's not in the heart. It's not about feeling. It's in the hips. It's in the being. When we embody our soul into our hips, which, by the way, it's trying to do all the time anyway. We don't have to cause it. The truth is that we're not embodied. That's an illusion, right? The idea of us being unintegrated, this is an illusion. So anyway, here I am going off again. But I would love to continue the conversation. And now I will be quiet and honor the time with deep gratitude to the two of you and anyone who's still listening.
For sure. Which, I think we could easily pick up off from this conversation in another conversation at, you know, because it's a very mind-boggling concept to the brain.
Right.
I can even notice my own thoughts going on this, and even like I am very in tune with like, all right, how will this be perceived, or how will people hear this?
Right.
I think it is useful and actually even in some ways necessary for us to continue the conversation to actually get a more rounded viewpoint and perspective on how all of those different stages of awareness and consciousness actually do coexist. Like we were talking about it being a circle, but then like practices, and I'm putting in air quotes because like you just said, it's not a practice. It's a way of just being, but then even to the next step is like, all right, well, what can someone do or how, like that's where I want to go next for sure. But
I'd love to do that
for another episode.
Yeah. For another episode. I can't wait to have that conversation. The beautiful thing is, from my perspective, those answers are simple. They're like right here. Because the thing we're practicing is just opens a door to who we really are. It's not right. creating something that's not there. Anyway.
Right. Yes. Yeah. I love that. Well, right. with that said, since we all agree, it seems unanimous that we'd love to have another conversation. We'll schedule that. But for now, if someone is really resonating with this conversation and wants to connect with you, if there's anywhere you can connect that you'd like them to connect with you, or anything you want to share, because I know you have that free program, which we'll put in the description, yeah. but if you wanted to share that for a minute.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, really it's a toe in the water kind of dynamic, right? I mean, it's a toe in the water intellectually for the conversation we're having. Does this fit for me? Does this guy resonate? Is any of this making sense? And at some point, if it does, presumably, you know, the listener is going to say, okay, but now I want to take that next step. And exploring divine resonance is a wonderful way to do that. It's a totally free program. It's a robust program. It's a 17-week long program. You get a login to my online learning platform. Just put your name and email address in, and you get those login credentials. All the classes are there up front. I would really encourage you not to, like, don't try to consume them all in 17 straight days or 17 straight hours. And I'm not trying to like honk my horn. It's not my horn to honk it. I really believe it is divine in through and as me, but just take it slowly. There's some teaching, there's some experience, there's some Q&A, there's a chance to ask questions in the online forum, and I will personally respond to them. So that would be a wonderful way. You can, you know, you'll have the link in the description for that. And you'll have a link to my website as well. Those are great places to start, but really the class, if you want to have an experience, that's the way to go.
Beautiful. And yeah. just to confirm again, to anyone listening and who does resonate with that offering from Ken, then the links will be in the description of this episode. So you can click that and check that out. So Ken, thank you for being here, and we look forward to our next conversation.
Can't wait. Thank you. It's an honor. Thanks, gents.
And that's it for today. So thanks for tuning in. We really hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed recording it. So any questions, any comments, connect with us on Instagram personally at Kevin F. Carton
or at Chris J. Carton or our podcast or Instagram page at Science and Spirituality Podcast. And if you feel guided to, the one thing that we do ask is for you to please rate the podcast and also leave a review. This way we can reach more people and in that way impact more lives. So with that, we'll see you on the next episode.